Leading off with the big story of the day, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents The Drive with Tyler Palumbus and Tina.
You didn't see the game? Tyler, not here today. Zach Bye is my man. Zach Bye.
What's up, man?
And I have learned from following the Rockies that if I really should call you not Zach, but Joshua.
Mm.
Josh Fuentes has become Joshua, and we know how oftentimes people named Zach are referred to as Josh. But I want to keep things on a, you know, formal level with you. So maybe just Joshua.
I'll answer to Josh or Joshua.
Are you Zachary? Is that the?
Yeah, that's my birth name. That's my government.
Who calls you Zachary?
No one.
Gotcha. Well, maybe I'll just call you Joshua then. Either way, whatever you call us, it's a sobering moment to be here because, I mean, seriously, raise your hand, careful if you're driving. But did you really think the Avalanche, after starting 2-0, would be down 3-2 and drop a game at home where they more or less, I wouldn't say dominated, but certainly they played even, if not slightly above, with the Golden Knights? Did you really think we'd be in this predicament?
Never. Never. And it's incredible how Game 5 was a mirrored microcosm of the series. Being up 2-0 in Game 5 and losing 3-2, being up 2-0 in the season, in the series, and being down 3-2. Last night was as big of a gut punch as I can remember because of how well the Avalanche played. Like, it was the response game. That felt like how it was supposed to feel. You're back at Ball Arena. They had won 13 consecutive games at Ball Arena. You had to go back to the month of March, D-Mac, to the last time that they had lost at home. March 27th was the date. And I just, after Donskoy's one-timer, what a beautiful pass from Alex Newhook, by the way. That was so emphatic, and it put the second goal on the board. And I took a deep breath, man. I got to admit, sure. I took a deep breath. They go into the third period at home where you haven't lost since March 27th with a two-goal lead. I mean, I was on the Avs minus a goal and a half, and I'm sitting there already fist pumping and like...
Mark the time, Richie.
I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. And then, you know, you have the Alex Tuck goal, and then the Marchessault has just killed the Avs. Just killed the Avs. And then ultimately 50 seconds into overtime. It's crazy how much this game mirrored Game 2. It's the inverse of it. Crazy.
Yeah, it's, you know, once you get to, well, even in overtime, I was just waiting for it to happen. I have fun. I've over the years, it's like, who's going to be the hero, you know, on Twitter, that sort of thing. And all sorts of fun. It's a good shot. It's a good shot.
Yeah.
Can't really blame Grubauer on that. I saw some people saying, it wasn't the right shot selection, too easy to get blocked. That's all right. That happens. That happens all the time. Sometimes the puck just... That's hockey, man. Takes some weird bounces sometimes. And you know what? 9 out of 10 times, he probably doesn't score that goal. Grubauer probably makes that stop. The dude made a perfect shot.
He did. Wrister, glove side. There's no one in front of you. He's coming at 1,000 miles per hour. I mean, I'm not hanging Groovy out to dry.
No.
But you say 9 out of 10 times? 9 out of 10 times, Marc-Andre Fleury blocks that shot from Brandon Saad with, you know, 0.8 seconds or whatever it was, a second left.
That's right.
I mean, that was a really cheap goal for a future Hall of Fame
goalie.
He
almost got arguably lazy on it, trying to glove it across his body. I mean, he had a beat on it. That's not a hard stop for him. He just whiffed it. You could tell by his reaction, he had that puck in his sights all the way, and so he got a little bit lucky there. But you just put, you know, you put pucks on net, Zach, and you go from there. That's, you know, hockey 101, so taking a shot from the point is nothing crazy. Where the puck goes, how it bounces, where it rebounds to, you can't predict that.
And that's a crazy thing, because Mark Stone blocked the shot. Like, he blocked that shot. He turns around, and he's getting the puck right back with no one in front of him.
It's a lucky break.
Crazy.
Lucky break.
Crazy.
And you could say the Avs, I mean, you know, one game two on a you know, where they yeah. were outplayed yeah. for the majority of the game.
Yeah.
So now what? Well, there is history here. And if you make the argument, the Avalanche and the Knights really is the equivalent of a Stanley Cup Finals. I've heard that a million times because they're the two best teams in the NHL.
Yeah.
Then who cares when you play them, whether it's the Stanley Cup Finals or now? It doesn't matter. You are going to have a matchup, theoretically, if you're going to win a championship, over high-quality teams. Zach, here we are. Now what? And if you want to look at the past, and we did go back and look it up, the Avs were down 3-2 to the Devils back in 2001.
Yep.
And in game six, when you had to play in that crap hole, and I was there for it, by the way. We were nuts, man. We were traveling. What the hell is that, by the way?
I have no idea.
Oh my God. We got some sort of alarm going off. Seriously. What is that? All right. Anyways, we were in Jersey, and this is back in the, you know, I'm working at over at KBPI, and I don't even know why we went, but we went. We were jerks then to the Jersey Devils crowd. You know, it's like the cast of Sopranos at Jersey Shore. That's the entire arena at the Meadowlands. And Patrick Waugh stood on his head. 24 saves, shut out the Devils, and all the momentum after that felt like it was back with the Avalanche, and they cleaned things up in Game 7, and I wouldn't say they won easily, but they never trailed. They did well. They, you know, won Game 7, and it was epic, top to bottom. Well, here we go again, Zach. So at some point, if you're a championship team, it's not a cakewalk. You've got to overcome some elements of adversity, and here we are. So now what?
Well, let me start with Nathan MacKinnon. 3 consecutive games. Really quiet, without a point. Guy started the playoffs on a literal historic pace, putting himself in just absurd categories with Wayne Gretzky and Mario Lemieux. Haven't heard his name a whole lot. And, you know, it's one of these things where, like, Grubauer's been good. Grubauer's been good throughout this series. I think Marc-Andre Fleury's been a little bit better. By the way, now a fourth all-time in playoff wins for Marc-Andre Fleury. I'll start with MacKinnon. You know, but one of the other deflating things about last night is you say, like, now what? There was adjustments that needed to be made. Jared Bednar made some adjustments, and they worked. Like, he put Brandon Saad in with the top line. He scores the first goal of the game. Alex Newhook was inactive for 2 consecutive games. He plays, and he puts the pinpoint pass on Donskoy's stick for the one-timer. Like, some of those adjustments worked, and they still lost at home. That's why I'm feeling a type of way today. Do I think they can still win the series? Absolutely I do. But, man, this is the tallest task in recent memory. You're going to have to go on the road. You're going to have to, you know, obviously beat them. And I'll say this, D. I think if they go on the road and win game 6, I think they'll win game 7.
Oh, well, I do too. Because, and that's what it felt like in 2001. Boy, did they have their backs up against the wall. They were facing a great goaltender, a great team. Hockey was actually kind of boring back then. The Devils had a system of hockey that it would just called the left wing lock, and they would just lock boring. Effective.
I remember that team pretty well.
Super boring. Great goaltender, Brodeur, and, you know, it felt like you're toast. You're like, you know, and that, think about that Avs team. Wah, Sakic, Forsberg, Foote. My guy Aaron Miller. Yeah. Aaron was cool, but anyways, they just, it was Patrick Waugh that stood on his head. So, all right, here we go, Zach. We can't really count on McKinnon at this point. We can't really count on anybody. My man, Groovy, what you got? Here we go.
Yeah, I mean, look.
As a finalist, here we go, dude.
Yeah,
this is it.
A couple of them here in this series. You know, and that's the thing. I don't think Groovy's been bad. I think Groovy's been good. You know, in that series that you're referencing, 2001, Patrick Waugh, over the course of four games in the middle of that series, gave up 12 goals. So he wasn't very good in the middle of that series.
Correct.
He was great when it mattered most. Grubauer's been good throughout the series. You need him to be even better. You need him to be great. I disagree with you a little bit when you say, hey, we can't count on McKinnon. We can't. I they've been quiet. There's still time left. There's still time left to be a hero.
If you think you're going to win this game 5-3 and McKinnon's going to have two goals and an assist and that's how you're going to win, okay, great. I wouldn't count on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It feels like, although in the Vegas Wild series, the game really got away from the Wild and the Golden Knights put it to them, but. Now, generally, these are tight games. They're close games, unless really you've given up.
And they definitely haven't given up. You know, it's just one of these things where there was too many self-inflicted wounds, man. Like, look at how Vegas scored. There was just a twinge of sloppiness. You know, these turnovers in your own zone, Burakovsky. You know, a cross-ice pass in his own zone that leads to the Alex Tuck goal that really puts life back in Vegas. They were right back in the game, but it was self-inflicted. And each of the goals had an element of that. So they were winning these micro battles that they were losing the last eight periods. They were winning them, but they still found a way to just cough up possessions and led to Vegas goals. So they can't get quite right now.
You know what it is? You know, I'm not actually like a lot. I think there's a lot of anxiety going on out there, and I get that. But I think I've turned the page on being anxious or the pucker factor. That's not really there anymore. Either they're a championship team this year or they're not. And we will find out tomorrow night in Vegas. And that's that. There's no reason to be anxious about it. Either your team's that team or not. That's the great, I mean, it's great and the terrible thing, say, about like the NCAA tournament and the NFL and the playoffs. I mean, just crazy stuff can happen where oftentimes when there's an upset, it is not the better team winning.
Sure.
In a series like this, the best thing about the NHL and the NBA playoffs, man, you lose a seven-game series, you're not as good as the other guys, period.
Yeah.
You can say whatever you want. You're not as good as the other guys. You had your chance. It wasn't a fluke. I promise you, back in the day, the Jacksonville Jaguars lose 99 out of 100 games to the Broncos, and the Broncos probably win three straight Super Bowls. But on that one day, okay. That doesn't happen in the NBA and the NHL, and frankly, with longer series in baseball. It's the one game, do or die sort of moments that, hey, man, really, seriously, anything can happen. That's why, you know, your good old Denver Broncos get to the playoffs and let's go. I mean, you really don't know. Anything
right.
can seriously happen.
Right.
That doesn't happen here. So I'm not anxious at all. We find out tomorrow night with the Avalanche if they're a better team than the Knights or not. And if they lose that game, no matter how it happens, they aren't as good as the Knights, and you got to look at it top to bottom and ask yourself why, when so many things were pointing in the direction that they were a better organization than the Knights.
Man,
so here we are.
You and I have disagreed on so many things through the years, and we're going to disagree on more things today, but I've never been more in agreement with what you just said. Because
that just proves you're probably wrong on a bunch of other stuff.
my eyes are telling me a story here. I've watched every shift of this one. My eyes right now are telling me that the Knights are the better team. What's the one game that hasn't looked quite like the others? Game one, where they sat Marc-Andre Fleury,
right.
They play Leonard, they win 7-1. Right. Since then, really, outside of maybe the first period in game two, the Vegas Knights have had their way with the Avs up until last night through the first two periods, and then when it mattered most, the Knights just got it done again. In Ball Arena, in Denver, Colorado.
By the way, that was an exceptionally stupid job of coaching. And it's not even because Robin is, like, a terrible goalie. He's not. It's what it says to the rest of the team.
Yeah.
And that's where there was that big let up, because the coach is telling the rest of the team, hey, this game doesn't matter. We got to rest up our number one dude.
But
the rest of the team let up because of that move.
I don't disagree with you. But in such a results-oriented business, doesn't Peter DeBoer's move, it paid off. Marc-Andre Fleury has been brilliant
there
in this series. Brilliant.
Right, what a game plan. I got it. Hey, fellas, here's what we do. We drop the first two, and then we come back, we sweep the Avs. What do you say? One, two, three, nine.
Obviously, that's not how they drew it up, and I'm agreeing with your premise, but at the end of the day, it's about the end result, and the end result for DeBoer's group has been aces. I mean, it's just they've been terrific. They've taken the Avs' speed out of the game. That's what I think maybe my biggest takeaway these last three contests is, like, the Avs have this superpower, and the Knights have found a way to mitigate it to a certain degree.
All right, more on the Avs a little bit later on as we move along. I was on a Phoenix radio show. I understand you were on it too earlier this week. And you know what they were giving me crap about? And we can dig into all the things with the Nuggets and the Suns. We will for sure. Is they're asking, are you going to have a sold-out crowd? How's your crowd going to be? What capacity is your crowd? Like, they were making fun of us. It's like when we talk to those guys in Portland, and they're like, can you guys even watch your team? You know what? All of our little local stuff is starting to filter out to the rest of the world.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, don't worry about it for the Suns Nuggets. It's going to be sold out. Now, game seven for the Avs, 57%. And they were like, why is that happening? And I'm like, I don't know.
It's beyond bizarre.
Beyond bizarre.
I almost don't have any time for the conversation. It's just insane.
Well, I just figure, in fact, I guess I got to admit that 318 here, we haven't heard news that's changed. No, nothing on that? What do you want to bet, though? The Avs, you know, knock on wood, they win on Thursday, and all of a sudden, Friday, we hear, now, we figured it out. Now we figured it out.
Well, it's been a...
But it's embarrassing.
You know,
it's just
of course
embarrassing.
It is. Of course
our
it is.
Games are on TV, and we can't... We have a full-capacity crowd on Friday, but not on Saturday. It's embarrassing.
Of course it is. And it's been a really... honestly, going to Vegas... What an advantage they have with that crowd. They were tremendous. Bednar said after the game, like, it was a factor. It was hard for my guys to hear me. Communication, obviously, is pivotal. And when you can't hear the guy next to you, you know, it's worth mentioning. You can say it's, you know, granular because, you know, what happens inside the walls there happens inside the walls. But golly, man, it's a unique advantage in sports, your home crowd, and it seems like the willingness to keep it at 57%. I can't make it make sense for you, D-Mac.
I don't expect you to. Although our own Richie Carney actually was communicating with the NHL. Richie, do you have? Richie was. He spent work on it. He communicated several different times with the NHL. So do you got an update for us?
I did. Well, I'll tell you the three questions that I specifically asked them because I wanted to leave no room for wiggle room was, why are the Avalanche currently unable to increase their capacity beyond the 10,500, and is that a stipulation set on them by the NHL? What are their HVAC air circulation requirements, because that was something that KSE mentioned in their statement that was preventing them from doing it? Are there previous ticket sales capacity approvals, which is another thing that they used in their statement, handed down by the NHL that are preventing them from doing this? And their response to me was, each league and each club must make their own decisions based on their particular situations and the advice of their medical experts.
Mm-hmm. So they're putting it on the team.
Correct.
The NHL's putting on the ads. All right. And was that it?
That was it. I reached out for additional comment because I felt like that I got the same vibe that you did. And I said my interpretation of that is that you as the NHL are doing nothing to prevent the Avalanche from increasing this capacity.
But the NHL, to your response, is putting it back on the team itself.
Correct, and they did not respond to my follow-up request.
The governor of the state is putting it on the NHL and the team. Like, it's got nothing to do with politics here, fellas. We're open for business. The Avalanche are putting it back on government regulations and other sort of nebulous things that don't appear to... maybe they're true and maybe they're not true. So nobody is taking accountability for this, period. Nobody is. Nobody's saying it's on us. Nobody.
Not yet.
Great. Embarrassing, Zach. Oh, watch. It'll change. Watch. It'll change. We got to win. Got to win. You know what? You got to win. Let's have a good problem. Let's have a first world problem. Let's win on Thursday, and then we can gripe about this issue. Because you lose, and it's just over, and who cares about Saturday night? We'll find something else to do. The Rockies are probably, no, never mind. It's all in on the Nuggets, hopefully. And where will the Nuggets be? Loved, you got a podcast going on, right? With, Jokic, reaction to Jokic.
Yeah. Did the Jokic, MVP, you know, kind of mini podcast, 15, 17, 20 minutes, something like that.
Reaction on DenverFan.com.
Yeah.
All sorts of, just so, I mean, we got lucky. It happened, you know, during our show yesterday. So just relatively briefly here, and we'll go on a little bit more, but in general, what's your overall reaction to Jokic? When you see somebody win a vote like that, first of all, awesome. Second of all, who voted against him? Like, if you've got such an overwhelming percentage of people voting for him, why in the world did anything go against him?
Human beings, man. Human beings are funny creatures. People wanting to be devil's advocates and think outside the box, you know, foolishly. I said on my podcast a month ago, I said this ultimately, the votes will look very similar to 2014 when Kevin Durant won it with 100 and I think it was 19 first place votes. The next amount of first place votes was 6 for LeBron. And it turned out to be relatively on target prediction. Was 96 first place votes for Jokic. Next most first place votes was Steph Curry with 5. So not unanimous, but you know, overwhelmingly conclusive that Nikola Jokic is the league's MVP. There's only one player in the NBA this year that checked every single box. That was Nikola. Really, any argument against him was such an uphill battle. I would feel so confident laying out my case in court. And, you know, I don't need to because 90% of the folks who had a vote voted for Nikola. And, you know, I look forward to a little bit later in the show going through
absolutely
a 5-pronged reasoning why exactly Nikola was so overwhelmingly the MVP and why I believe that it is the most signature high point in the history of this organization.
Well, that's going to be awesome. And so more good news than bad news for sure. We have that in the water cooler. Plus, if you missed it, the dude had one job. One.
Oh my gosh.
Job.
Oh my gosh.
And he blew it. You'll hear it coming up.
Does your company make safety a top priority? Alliance Safety, Colorado's premier supplier of safety equipment, is here to help make it one. As an authorized distributor of 3M safety products and home to all pro gear, Alliance has a vast inventory of personal protective equipment designed to keep your workers safe, including fall protection, safety glasses, protective gloves, and gas detection solutions. Visit AllianceSafetyInc.net. Call 303-388-8766 or stop by the Alliance Safety Warehouse off I-70 and Tower today to lock up all your safety needs.
It's time to take a trip to the water cooler.
Is this good for the company?
We need to talk about your TPS reports.
Did you see the memo about this?
Well, we find it's always better to fire people on a Friday.
If you could just go ahead and make sure you do that from now on, that would be great.
Here's Tyler and D-Mac.
What would you say you do here?
My guys, Zach Bai and for Tyler today. Let's cover some other stuff. Did you hear about this? When Jokic was announced as the MVP. Now, you got a spokesperson for Kia, because it's, I guess it's the Kia MVP.
Mm-hmm.
So what is your one job as the person, spokesperson, I assume, for Kia, that gets to announce the MVP. What is your one job?
I'd say the one job is to get the name right of the guy that's getting the award.
As simple as that. You get to, spokesperson, whoever you are, get to announce the MVP. You got one job. Whatever else you do, the only thing you really have to do is announce a name. Now, we may butcher names around here all the time. I guarantee you, if it hasn't happened already, it will happen. But that's not our one job. It's part of our job. But if we had one job, Zach, if all our day consisted of getting one thing right, phonetically, have somebody say it, repeat it a million times.
Albert Okwuegbunam.
You know, you'd figure it out one way or another. Michael Ojemudia. You figure it out eventually. And Okwuegbunam, I know there's other ways to say it. We don't care. We're sticking with Okwuegbunam. I am, at least.
That's the way you say it.
Cool. One job, and listen to how this dude screwed it up.
Goodness, I don't know much about history.
Oh, wait, I played the wrong thing. That was my one job. Here's how the guy screwed it up.
So today, it's my distinct honor to present Nikola Kovic.
Wow.
Kokic, I'm sorry, of the Denver Nuggets.
Are you kidding me?
So embarrassing. It's so embarrassing.
I mean, are you kidding me?
Nikola Kovic. Kokic, I'm sorry.
Kokic?
I'm sorry. You screwed it up again. I mean, he's putting letters in there that don't even exist.
Nikola Kovic.
Kovic.
Even if he said Jokic, I would have accepted it.
Let's think how stupid Kovic actually is here. Where are you getting the K sound from when you see the J? And then, where's the V coming from?
There's no V.
There's no K. Well, there's
a K.
K, you know, but not in the beginning. And then
Kokic, I'm sorry.
Kokic. Oh my God. So he sticks with the K as a J.
So bad.
What? What language in the world is a J pronounced K? A K sound. What else?
Of the Denver Nuggets with the 2020-2021 Kia NBA Most Valuable Player of the Year Award. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. It's an honor.
Yo, every, I know this for a fact. Everyone can say yo, and everyone can say chick. Jokic. Oh, I just did it now. I screwed it up myself. Jokic. Jokic. Nikola.
Yo.
But here's Kitch. The thing that's more embarrassing to me, Derek.
It's Nikola or Nikola, I guess, but either way would probably be fine.
Nikola Jokic.
It's not even that hard.
If you practice it a couple times, Nikola Jokic. You want to know what's more embarrassing? That guy is a white collar dude that's thrown in this spot and it's probably a really cool moment for him personally, but maybe he's not the world's biggest NBA fan. I still hear guys on the NBA broadcast that cover the sport professionally not be able to say Nikola Jokic. It's embarrassing.
You know, how about the way Jokic, too, just kind of let it slide?
He's used to it, man. He's used to it. These guys on TNT screw it up enough.
Great opportunity, though, for him. If he was ever going to correct somebody, it's when you've just won the MVP.
Right.
He would have been well within his rights. And look at Michael Malone, man. He wasted no time. No, Michael! But hey, man, that's Jokic. He's a great dude. Oh, you know what? Go ahead. And we'll get to Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning got in the Ring of Fame. I know we're all incredibly shocked. We'll get to that and get to fun. But you did have something you wanted to say about Jokic. So maybe this is the right time. What did you want to lay out for us?
I'll lay it out as quickly as possible. There's five reasons why Nikola was the runaway MVP. Reason number one, the raw numbers. He averaged over 26 points a game. He was top 10 in the NBA in rebounds and assists. D-Mac, he essentially averaged as many assists per game as Luka Doncic and CP3, pulled down more rebounds per game than DeAndre Ayton and Joel Embiid. He averaged more steals per game as a 7-foot center than guards like Steph Curry and Jason Tatum. The raw numbers, that is what it is. If the raw numbers said he's the MVP, the advanced statistics screamed he was the MVP. D-Mac, there's something called player efficiency rating. Much like in the NFL now, we use QBR more than passer rating because it's more just encompassing. It factors in more than just a more simplistic number. PER is what a lot of basketball guys point to. We have the numbers for everyone in league history. Nikola Jokic had the 10th best, most efficient season in NBA history, more than some of Michael Jordan's MVP seasons, Shaq's MVP season, right. David Robinson. So the advanced numbers just really screamed it. So raw numbers, advanced data, he played for a winning team. Let's not lose sight of being on a winner. Like Steph Curry was an argument for MVP. His team lost as many games as they won. They couldn't get out of the play-in. So not only were the Nuggets a winning team, they were 22 games over 500 in the tough Western Conference. So there's the third prong. The fourth prong is context. Context is king. It matters a lot. You have your second best player go down, and the Nuggets were tied for the best record in the league since that moment. Somehow he took his game to another level. That's the fourth reason. And the fifth reason is just the cherry on top. It's the availability. You know, some people like Richard Jefferson on a broadcast a month ago saying, oh, I realize why he could be the MVP because of the availability. Some people have even referred to this season as the availability MVP. Mm-hmm. Those people are casual fans. If you were following along, it was just the cherry on top. But the fact that he did play 72 out of 72 games is just a signature little moment. So you have the raw numbers, the advanced data, the 22 games over 500 being the 3 seed in the West, the context of the injuries and how they were able to overcome them, and then finally the availability. Not one other player came close to checking all 5 boxes in Sharpie bold the way that Nikola Jokic did this year. So it wasn't close.
Does this, and the vast majority, crazy majority, agree with you. Does this make him the greatest Nuggets player of all time?
It does. It does for me. And all due respect to David Thompson and Alex English, Carmelo Anthony, Dikembe Mutombo, all those guys were great. But take a guy like Alex English, for example. He was awesome. No one scored more points in the 1980s than Alex English. He won the scoring title in 1983. He's the all-time points leader. He's great. Alex English was never first-team All-NBA. Nikola Jokic was first-team All-NBA 2 years ago and finished fourth in the MVP in 2019. Now he's in the Western Conference Finals the following year, and the next year he's winning the league's most valuable player. And you can't just say, oh, look at the accolades of Alex English's career and put him side by side with someone that's 26. We're in like chapter 4 of a 10-chapter story. You look up the all-time triple-double list in the history of professional basketball, in the history of pro basketball. Nikola Jokic is in the top 10.
Yeah.
Not for centers. He's top 10 in the history of the sport in triple-doubles. He's 26 years old. By the time he's 30, he will pass Wilt Chamberlain for most triple-doubles as a center in NBA history, and Wilt played in the fastest era of NBA basketball ever in the 1960s, little-known fact. So I just think while I respect anyone else's opinion that maybe someone else might be their favorite Nugget of all time, if we were talking about a merit-based discussion, I think Nikola Jokic is the greatest player in the history of the Denver Nuggets.
Well, I agree. And I think Carmelo Anthony's number two. And perhaps then you can debate about Alex English, David Thompson, Dikembe Mutombo, that sort of thing. You can go from there. And the people that just don't recognize what Melo did, they just, you know, they're just haters for other reasons. They're just not looking at things objectively. And it doesn't matter that he's 26. This is his sixth season with the Nuggets. You forget that they were dog crap when he came here, and they had to build back from the horrific Brian Shaw era, and they have. And who knew it was going to center around somebody who, when he was drafted, there was like a burrito commercial on TV. That's how irrelevant the actual choice was. So all hail Nikola Jokic. He's the best. And anybody who says he's not is wrong.
That's exactly how I feel about it. And the one other thing I want to say is here, two important pieces of history. One, he's the first center since Shaquille O'Neal to win the award. That happened 21 years ago. That's how long it's been, how much this game has changed. And he brought it back. And then number two, he is the first second-round draft pick to ever win this award. Willis Reed was technically a second-round draft pick back in 1963. He was picked eighth overall. That's how in the infancy of the NBA it was. He's so far and away the furthest draft pick to ever win this award. He is a unique kind of MVP.
So now, with all that, what does he have to do to DeAndre Ayton tonight? We'll get into it next.
It's The Drive on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. Here's Tyler Palumbus and D-Mac.
We were just asked, and you'll see it at DenverFan.com, see it on Facebook and on Twitter, who we're picking.
I freaking hate that graphic, by the way.
Why?
Personally,
you hate it? Or?
Especially during the Broncos season.
Like, I love it. Why do you hate it?
It's just...
Be accountable.
No. I don't mind that at all. I make my picks openly on the air, so there's no running from it. But when it lives on social, you lose regardless. Like, you pick the home team, oh, you homer, da da da. You pick against them, oh, you turncoat, da, da. So it's, you know, it is what it is.
Can't win in this business, dude.
No.
Nope. No way. So I picked reluctantly the Suns. Don't want to. Would love, love, love to be wrong. History tells you that game one with the Nuggets really seems to be meaningless, but I just do not know what the answer is for Chris Paul, and we're hearing that Michael Porter Jr. is not feeling so great with some back issues. So
he's gonna play though, right?
Oh, well, I think so. I hope so.
Will Barton. Will Barton could come back tonight.
Really? Well, that'd be cool.
What I'm hearing.
All right, so walk me off the ledge here a little bit, pal.
Well, if Michael Porter Jr. doesn't play, the Nuggets are probably in big trouble. In big trouble. I'm going to go ahead and assume that he plays.
Okay, fine, he plays. It's not enough just to play. He's got to be, definitively, ain't no doubt about it, the second best player out there for the Nuggets.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And if he's not, the Nuggets are in trouble. There's already such a void to fill. So if he's not 90% or better, and look, if he's not close to that, you just don't play him. He's way too important to this organization in a year where your championship aspirations are probably up in smoke anyway. So we'll see how they handle him. But how I can talk you off a ledge is that, one, you kind of led with it. The Nuggets traditionally lose game one. Whenever you think the Denver Nuggets are their backs are against the wall and the chips are down is when they are the best version of themselves. Now, obviously, there's probably a cap to that because of the personnel that aren't out there. But I think that's worth noting. And also, you know, Jokic, man, in that second half, he was not the best version of himself. He really wasn't. I saw him settle out of possessions. So many missed bunnies, missed tips, missed layups, missed 12 to 14 foot jumpers. And I just don't think that's going to happen tonight. I think it's going to be a big game from Jokic. And he's so much the head of the snake that when he was missing those shots there in the third and fourth quarter, you could see the rest of the team just kind of dobber down with those missed shots. So I think they will go as he goes. And I think that someone like Monte Morris, who played the worst playoff game that I've ever seen him play, 1 for 10 from the floor, 2 points, minus 28 when he was out there, he'll be much better. So I think, and Austin Rivers as well, man. Austin Rivers was not very good in game one. I think you'll see a better version of him. And, you know, look, hopefully Aaron Gordon can bring the same sort of,
You're not walking me off the ledge though here, dude. You're giving me a lot of what ifs. Okay, fine.
I have to forecast it. So they're,
Jokic dominates Ayton. I think that'll happen too.
Okay.
Now what?
Everyone else is going to have to step the heck up, man. This is a really good Phoenix team. This is not, look, Phoenix is a, you know, 50-game winner in a shortened season 2-seed for a reason. There's not really a ton of weaknesses. I'm banking off history. I'm banking off game one bounce backs. I'm banking off how they've responded to adversity over the last 3 years. And there's a little bit of faith there. I'll give it to you. You saying, hey, you're not giving me enough. there's not enough for me to tangibly draw from to like conclusively win you over. So I am kind of, you know, like I said, forecasting.
I'll tell you this. This can't happen again. I mean, this can't happen in terms of Chris Paul. You know, that can't happen.
Paul and Porter. Two in a row. Chris Paul. Paul and Compaiser. Shot clock at 4. Oh, go right back.
Great Kevin Harlan. Kevin is great, isn't he?
He's the best.
But that can't happen. How do you stop him at least? How do you just make him calm down a little bit and not be like that?
Well, man,
what's our answer there?
He was a hero there in that third and fourth quarter. He was so good. You know, Chris Paul is still very much one of the best players at the game of basketball on planet Earth.
You should be able to defend more effectively Chris Paul. Shouldn't you?
You don't sound like you have the proper amount of respect on his name when you're talking about him
right
now.
He's 36 years old, my man. He's been injured in the beginning of the playoffs. He was averaging like, what, 9 points against the Lakers?
That's because he was really banged up. This dude is not hurt. He took a shot on that shoulder in the first quarter. I knew that this was not going to be as much of a factor when I heard the news that he was practicing with the team leading up to the series. If you're really hurt, you're shut down until that series started. When I heard he was practicing, I was like, ooh, okay, he's going to be ready. Took a little shot there in the first quarter, grimaced a little bit, but he's fine. So this is not some injury ravaged Chris Paul. 21 points for Chris Paul is not any sort of earth-shattering thing. I went and looked back at his game log this morning. In a shortened season, he was 20 points or more 21 times this season. So he is a freaking bona fide Hall of Famer who's still in his prime. He is a definition of a basketball traffic cop where he just directs everything possession by possession. He's awesome. This is what makes this task so challenging because I look at their roster, especially their starting five. Man, the Nuggets are really, really outmatched here. But at the same time, it's still, and I told you this 2 days ago when I came in here with you and Tyler, the temperature of most of the game, it was a really bad 15 to 18 minute stretch for Denver, 34-9 run. And within it was a 16-0 run. It was a really bad stretch. The rest of the substance of the game, I really liked what I saw of the Nuggets. So although I'm saying they're outmatched, although they're clearly an underdog in the game in the series, through most of the substance, the meat of the game, it didn't feel like Denver was boxing out of their weight class. So I think tonight's game is going to be really good, razor thin margins, and I have the Nuggets going in there and upsetting Phoenix.
Yeah, I have the Suns winning, unfortunately, but it kills me to go here.
It's not that D-Mac. Your
kills me,
D-Mac. Your prediction, if you polled like coast to coast, most people think the Suns are going to win tonight. They're better than 2-1 favorite to win the series. They're a legitimate favorite here. So your prediction is more in line with everyone else. I am kind of, you know, I'm taking the better parts of game one and applying it in more wholesale fashion to game two.
Do you like your prediction or do you love your prediction?
I barely like it.
There you go. Football at 4. Kareem Jackson does not have Drew Locke's back. You'll hear why next.